time for Wrigley's Spearmint.
The March of Time.
The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum are the best-known makers of gum in the world. The editors of Time are the best-known historians of the news. So Wrigley's asks the editors of Time, the weekly news magazine, to prepare and present, for your enjoyment, their reenactment of memorable scenes from the news of the world.
From the March of Time.
Friday, April 24th, 1936. Today in London, in the musty little chamber of the House of Commons, are heard repercussions of Chancellor of the Exchequer Neville Chamberlain's three-day-old announcement of Britain's huge war preparation budget and income tax rise for fiscal 1937. To the floor rises Labourite member Dr. Hugh Dalton.
When Mr. Chamberlain presented his budget to the Commons, he chose to ignore the loyal opposition's question about the war debt to America. The British budget is not truthfully balanced when Mr. Chamberlain ignores a £36 million liability.
Mr. Speaker, what is the earthly use of bringing that up? If the member is really anxious to start repayment of the interest on the American debt, how does he propose to pay?
His Majesty's government, instead of evading the issue as it has been doing regularly year after year, should at least discuss the matter with the American government. I am not sure the Americans will understand our spending huge amounts on new armaments and cold-bloodedly ignoring our World War debt to them. Where is our self-respect?
Mr. Speaker, the member from Epping, the Right Honorable Winston Churchill, I do not want our nation to be written down in the ignoble company of debt defaulters, gentlemen. But up against the $180 million payment on the debt to America this year has loomed a prodigious and profoundly alarming figure which makes America's $180 million look like a handful of coppers. $8 billion. £1,600,000. That is the increase in Germany's expenditures for armament since Herr Hitler came into power. Gentlemen, how can we pay for the last war when we know we must defend ourselves against such preparations of Germany for the next war?
Today from Washington comes a statement by famed member of the Department of Justice and chief of G-Men, J. Edgar Hoover.
There are 150,000 people who have committed murder actually roaming at large in the United States today. The average sentence of convicted murderers is only 4 years in prison. According to present crime rates, 300,000 persons now living in the United States will be murdered. During the next year, one out of every 16 American families will be the victim of some serious crime. The blame for this amazing disregard for the law of the land can be laid squarely at the door of crooked politicians and their protection of the criminal. If every public official in America were fingerprinted and the results checked back to our records in the Rogues Gallery, there would be a scandal that would rock the nation.
Today from Saarbrücken, Germany, is reported an incident occurring as a Metz train puffs into the Saarbrücken railroad station. Out of a compartment steps a Frenchman, is promptly surrounded by a squad of Nazi police.
Back again to the Saar, Herr Charles Galliard. I must tell you that your so frequent visits to the German Saar arouse suspicions.
But, monsieur, my mother lives here. She is very ill.
Last time you said you came to see your wife's family.
But it is true. Why, indeed, am I under suspicion?
You were formerly a French administrator at the Saar coal mines, Herr Galliard. The Reich police wish to question you.
But, monsieur, I know nothing. And what possible connection is there between German military secrets and the Saar coal mines?
None at all, except yourself. Herr Galliard, you are under arrest as a spy.
Marched off to Saarbrücken jail, Charles Galliard, one-time French administrator of the Saar coal mines, today is the latest spy suspect along the tense Rhineland frontier. Coincidentally, in Paris, at French Secret Service headquarters, 231 Boulevard Saint-Germain, comes an agent to report.
I have just returned from the Saar, monsieur, and have my report ready.
From the Saar? Ah, yes. The Germans arrested Monsieur Galliard there today.
These Nazis are even touchy about their coal mines.
But wait, monsieur. The deeper galleries of the German coal mines in the Saar run right up to the French border. Hand-picked Nazi miners, I discovered, are secretly at work night and day digging these coal galleries into the French territory. At Muhlenbeck, Grossrösslingen, and Forbach, the German miners are directly beneath French fortresses.
The coal mines. Then the German military plan is to fill their new mines with explosives, blast the French fortress above them, and break through the Saar frontier into France.
So German interest in one-time mine officer Galliat, who, spy or no, is one Frenchman uncomfortably familiar with the under-Saar web of coal tunnels, today substantiates a discovery confounding French army circles, that the Nazis have outsmarted France's famed perfect defense, that the 300 feet deep, 300 mile long Maginot line of steel and concrete from Luxembourg to the Swiss border is vulnerable to German attack from beneath, from the coal mines of the Saar. Today, to thousands of U.S. communities gravely pondering over what will happen when relief money runs out, the state of New Jersey gives a partial answer when, at the session of the New Jersey legislature Tuesday afternoon, up on the floor of the Senate stands State Senator Clifford R. Powell.
Mr. Speaker.
The senator from Burlington County.
Mr. Speaker, we haven't done anything about the gravest problem that faces the state of New Jersey today. Relief for the unemployed. I ask you for the second time to vote on my resolution to appropriate $5 million for temporary relief.
May I ask the senator where we're to get this money from?
To that question, I must confess I haven't the answer.
The resolution having been made, I call on the members of the state Senate for vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The resolution is defeated.
As the New Jersey legislature, doing nothing about state relief, adjourns, a tattered group of 200 unemployed men and women march same day into the state capitol, where they take possession of the legislature's lower house, the assembly chamber, occupy the benches of New Jersey's assemblymen, conduct a mock session of the assembly for three continuous days and nights, as one of their leaders, John Spain Jr., plays mock speaker.
The unemployed assembly of the state of New Jersey is again in session. We thank the local merchants for their meat and bread, and the Workers' Alliance for their beds and pillows that have made it possible for us to stay here for 3 days. Now are we ready for new business?
Mr. Speaker.
The unemployed assemblyman from Burlington County.
Mr. Speaker, I want to make a ham sandwich. Have you got a piece of bread?
Yes, certainly. Will a sergeant-at-arms please lend me his penknife?
There you are, Mr. Speaker.
Good. I shall hereby slice this bread on the assembly clerk's desk, which is the first practical use that's ever been made of the desk.
Mr. Speaker, we've been here only 3 days and three nights, but we've done as much as the legislature did in 3 months. Exactly nothing.
Right.
One moment, sir. Let me through here, please. I'd like to speak to every one of you in this assembly room.
Who are you?
Baron McCampbell. I used to be one of the assemblymen for this state, and I demand that you hear me out.
All right, go ahead.
As the citizen and taxpayer, I tell you that you're all wrong in convening here like this in the assembly room. You're a lot of children. Under the New Jersey law, you're all paupers because you've been getting money you didn't work for. If I offered you work, you wouldn't take it.
Unemployed Assembly. I'll give the answer to Mr. McCampbell. Since the special session of this assembly was called off for today, I'm making a motion that we don't budge an inch and stay here in this assembly chamber right through the weekend till the state of New Jersey votes us money for relief.
That's right.
Now, that may be until hell freezes over, but we'll stay right here until it does.
As Democratic senatorial candidate Theron McCampbell is rushed from the New Jersey State Assembly room, the adamant army of jobless continues its mock legislative session. Tonight around the state building bristles a corps of state police armed with machine guns, ready for signs of riot. And the Senate and Assembly announce they will meet for the crisis on Monday. Today in London is recalled a scene which turns time back to the black, stormy night of November 15th, 1933. 400 miles off the coast of Ireland from the stricken British freighter Saxelby, caught in a 50-mile-an-hour North Atlantic hurricane, goes a frantic call.
SOS, SOS. Freighter Saxelby, pounding heavily. Saxelby disabled by heavy seas, taking water fast. 27 men aboard. Position, latitude, 51.32. 51.32. Longitude, 19.50. 19.50. Freighter Saxelby, SOS.
Freighter Saxelby, Berengaria proceeding to your rescue. 20 hours away. Saxelby, Berengaria making 20 knots. Stick to your ship. Saxelby, stick to your ship.
But on the disabled, wallowing Saxelby, in the forecastle below her tilting decks, Sailor Joe O'Kane and a shipmate are frantically gathering up their few belongings.
The old tub will never stand this pounding. How do you duck, Joe?
Do you think she'll really go down?
Why, she's settling by the head now. Can't you feel her? Come on, Joe. All hands on deck. Hey, what are you doing now?
I'm writing a note. We'll never launch a boat in this sea.
Writing a note?
I got a wife ashore.
Oh, will you? Here's an old cocoa tin. Put your note in that.
Thanks.
Come on now, hurry up.
I'm coming. I'm coming.
And by the Lord away. And by the Lord away.
SS Berengaria calling Liverpool. Berengaria calling Liverpool. Arrived at the position given by freighter Saxelby just before midnight. Steaming at reduced speed through mountainous seas. Found absolutely no trace of Saxelby or her lifeboats. Cruised over wide area without success. We are proceeding to port. Signed E.L. Britton, Master SS Berengaria.
So the freighter Saxelby, with her crew of 27 men, is entered in marine records simply as lost at sea with all hands. Then today at Aberavon, South Wales, a little tin cocoa box, washed up on the beach and picked up by a fisherman, is brought to the cottage of the widow O'Kane, who opens a faded penciled note.
To Mrs. Dinah O'Kane. Steamer Saxelby, sinking somewhere off the Irish coast. Heavy seas, chances slim. Love to sisters, brothers, and to you, Joe.
Time marches on.
You are listening to The March of Time, the reenactment of memorable scenes from the news of the world, prepared and presented by the editors of Time.
Time marches on at high pressure. Haven't you noticed that some motorists are always pressing, always trying to beat the light or trying to get ahead of the other fellow? If you happen to know a driver like this, do him a kindness. Offer him a stick of Wrigley's spearmint gum. He will enjoy it, and at the same time you'll notice that he's more relaxed, not so impatient. Really do this. The result will surprise you.
Again Monday night at 10:30 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, and every night, Monday through Friday, the March of Time.
Time marches on. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.